Available at intelligencegroup.com.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to a special edition of Midday, coming to you live from the Minnesota Public Radio booth here at the Minnesota State Fair. I'm Gary Eichten, and today, in conjunction with the St. Paul Pioneer Press, we are hosting a debate among the candidates for the 4th District congressional seat that's currently held by Democrat Bruce Vento. Democrats have held that seat, which includes the city of St. Paul and surrounding suburbs. Democrats have held that seat since 1948. But with Congressman Vento stepping aside and with the changing demographics in the district, this year's race is expected to be one of the closest in the nation. Control of the U.S. House may very well hang in the balance. Now, last hour, we heard from the Independence Party candidates for the 4th District seat. One of them will move on to the November general election against Republican Linda Runbeck. This hour, we've been joined by the four DFLers who will be appearing on the primary election ballot on September 12th. One of these four people will be a survivor and appear on the ballot in November, and the others will be voted off the ballot. Now, once again, those of you here in our audience, if you have a question for the candidates, it's a great opportunity to find out where they stand on the issues. If you've got a question for the candidates, just step up to our mic, and St. Paul Pioneer Press editorial page editor Ron Clark will get you on the air. Those of you listening on the radio, give us a call on our call-in line, that number 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000, outside the Twin Cities, 1-800-242-2828. And again, if you're near a computer, log on to minnesotapublicradio.org, and you can actually watch this debate as it occurs. The pictures are a little, well, they lag a little bit, but, you know, it's like the old pictures from the moon, but it works pretty well, and it's kind of fun to see what the state fair setup looks like and what the candidates look like. MinnesotaPublicRadio.org. We also have a forum underway on our website, so you can add your comments as we go along. All right, well, let's meet the candidates here, and what I'd like to do, if it's okay, is give each of you about 2 minutes to give us a quick overview of why it is you decided to run for Congress. And so folks will get an opportunity to know who you are and a little bit more about you. Why don't we do this in alphabetical order? Chris Coleman is from St. Paul. He's a member of the St. Paul City Council, elected 2 years ago. And Mr. Coleman, why did you decide to run for Congress?
I'm glad it wasn't the first test of this to decide who was first on the alphabetical order. In the seat, I might have lost that one. Gary, all my life I've been involved in my community. I was born into a political family. My father, Nick Coleman, was elected to the state senate when I was a year old. Served as Senate Majority Leader from 1972 to 1980. And all my life, he taught me, my mom taught me, that it was really important to participate in your community. My dad from an elected standpoint, but my mom from a standpoint of just, you know, you can be involved in your community in a lot of different ways. Be involved in organizations, helping other people, be involved in church. So as I, in my adult life, I have been part of a lot of different things. When I lived in the Frogtown community in St. Paul, I was the head of the district council over there. I was on boards that dealt with affordable housing, dealt with safety issues. And 3 years ago, I was elected to the St. Paul City Council. So all my life, I've been taught that public service is not something to kind of scoff at, but something that was very honorable. When Bruce Vento announced that he was running or was retiring from this seat, I looked at it and I said, you know, where can I make a difference? I think I made a difference on the city council. I think I made a difference in Frogtown when I was working there. And I really believe that I can make a difference for people when I go to Congress. I have 2 kids in the St. Paul public school system. One will start kindergarten next week and one will start third grade. I really believe that the future of this country depends on our educational system, and I want to be a part of shaping that. I want to be a part of shaping a solution for Social Security. I want to be a part of making sure that the legacy that Bruce Vento had on the environment is also preserved.
That was Chris Coleman. Kathy Hartnett is a businesswoman from Mendota Heights, former member of the St. Paul School Board. She's worked out in Washington with the House of Representatives Democratic Study Group and the National Women's Political Caucus. Kathy Hartnett, why did you decide you wanted to run for Congress this year?
Well, I didn't intend to run for office again. I've been in the private sector since 1983, but I grew up in St. Paul, and I'm still active in St. Paul. And frankly, when I watched our Democratic Party in the last governor's primary race, where 20% of the voters turned out, I decided it was time for good Democrats to ask our party to change. And so I decided to run for Congress because I think we have worn the electorate out. And what we need are new members of Congress to go from the private sector and use their skills to try to wake everybody up and make politics more interesting again. The Democratic Party has failed the voters of Minnesota. We turn out 2,600 people at precinct caucuses, and that's how we make decisions about what candidates we support. I want us to take a risk, and I want to use Congress as a bully pulpit to talk about how we re-engage voters with politics and make elections more fun, more interesting, and a much shorter campaign season. We eat our own in the Democratic Party from March until September, and I think it's time that somebody called it what it is. It's a failed system, and good Democrats are brave enough to change it.
That was Kathy Hartnett. Next up is Betty McCollum from North St. Paul. She is the party's endorsed candidate, and she has served for the last 8 years in the Minnesota House. Betty McCollum, why are you running for Congress?
I'm running for Congress because my friends and neighbors and my colleagues in the Minnesota House and Senate encouraged me to do so. They know that I'm a person who works very hard on family issues. I've worked hard on health care. We need to change the way health care formulas come into this state. We have seniors that are choosing between prescription drugs and the ability to be able to stay in their house. That's wrong. I'm running because we need to have more economic security. And in order to do that, we need to have the best public education system available. I'm a product of the public education system. My children are attending colleges, public colleges here in Minnesota. So there's work that needs to be done in that area. And in these bright, prosperous economic times, when I'm out talking to friends and neighbors and people who have called in to talk to me, they're very, very concerned that they're being left behind because they're seeing what's going on with health care coverage, housing, transit, transportation, and Social Security for themselves or for their parents. And that's why I'm running, to work for my friends and neighbors.
That was Betty McCollum. And finally, our fourth candidate is Steve Novak, who is from New Brighton. He has served in the Minnesota legislature for 26 years, the last 18 in the Minnesota Senate. Steve Novak, why did you decide to move to the Congress, or try to?
Well, I'm hoping to bring my personal experience both in government and private industry to Congress. I think that I could make a difference for the 4th District in Washington by bringing the experience that I've gained at the legislature and by running the medical foundation at Regents Hospital to the table. I believe that I'm best equipped to bring the diversity of the 4th District to the front of the discussion, both from a geographic standpoint and from the standpoint of the great variety of people who live in this district. Although I've represented the suburbs, I've always been a strong proponent of policies that have helped to build the city of St. Paul, and I'm very pleased that the person that I think is the best mayor this town's ever had is my campaign chair, George Latimer. I'm also very pleased that I've been able to bring together large numbers of organizations that have historically been part of the DFL family, the Minnesota Teamsters, the construction trades, the police, and Education Minnesota. So I want to bring my experience that I've learned, frankly, in the private sector to the forefront of the debate on health care. For the last several years, I've run the Medical Foundation at Regents Hospital, and I've learned a lot about the gap between federal policies and federal funding. I've worked directly with the International Health Center, the Trauma Center, Emergency Health Care, and I think I've learned a lot about what I can do to maybe help bring health care and make it more affordable and accessible for people, and also public education. So those are my two issue priorities in this campaign.
All right, those are the four DFL candidates for the 4th District Congressional seat. They have joined us here at the State Fair. If you're just tuning in, this is Midday on Minnesota Public Radio, a debate co-sponsored, worth sponsoring it, as is the St. Paul Pioneer Press. Those of you here in the audience, now if you've got a question for the candidates, come on up to the mic, and Ron Clark will get you squared away, and we'll get you on the air. If you're listening on the radio, give us a call at 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2800. One of these people will move on to the November general election, and the others will be eliminated from the race. Before we get to our listener questions, the party does have an endorsed candidate, Betty McCollum. Should that be much of a factor when people weigh who to try to decide who to vote for? Why don't we start with the endorsed candidate, Betty McCollum?
Well, It obviously, people up here on the stage, a couple others besides myself, thought it was important. They sought the endorsement, outspend me in securing the endorsement. But the reason why it's important is because it brings with it volunteers, people to help stuff envelopes, do mailings, get involved, friends and neighbors, people that you live next door to that care about our political process. And I'm very proud to have the support of Congressman Bruce Vento and Senator Paul Wellstone. They've been mentoring me and going out on when occasions present. And it's when I've been here at the fair and people come through and they're talking to Paul, I learn a lot about federal issues and state issues that impact people's lives. This election's about people and families, and that's who endorsed me, and that's who's working on my campaign, and I'm proud to have their support.
Anybody else want to comment?
I would like to.
Chris Coleman?
I think it used to be very important when we used to have 20 or 25% of the population that would turn out for precinct caucuses, where they really would debate the issues, where it was bringing in new faces. But if you look at what's happening across the country and in the state of Minnesota over the last couple of years, people are being turned off by politics. And I think the caucus system right now and the endorsing convention are not representative of the people in the state of Minnesota. They're not bringing people in. People's lives are very busy. So, you know, to spend 8 hours on a Saturday and 5 hours on a Tuesday night and a couple more Saturdays that they spend, people just aren't participating in the process. If you look at why so many people came out for the first time ever to vote for Jesse Ventura, why people came out for the first time ever to vote for John McCain in the primary states, it's because they will believe in politics. They will come out and participate in it if they think that something is going to change, if they think that they have actually, you know, a say in what's happening in the country. I think people have lost faith in the caucus system. They've lost faith in the convention system. It's why the DFL-endorsed candidates haven't been winning over the last several election cycles. And I think that we have to be able to say, let the people decide, and that's what's going to happen on September 12th.
Steve Novak?
I'd like to add just a couple of comments about it. I've been a DFL candidate for the legislature 10 different times. I'm proud of my political party, and I certainly would like to represent it in the race for Congress. I did not win the endorsement. I think the problem with the convention this year was that the turnout was historically low. No one knew in advance there was going to be a race for Congress, and so I think it's fair that we follow the law, and the law provides for a primary to be a check on the decision made by the people who came to the convention. This is a congressional seat that over the last 40 or 50 years has only had three congressmen. And yet, interestingly, every time that we've had a contest, back in 1976 with Bruce Vento and back in 1958 with Joe Carth, we had a primary. So I think it's totally appropriate that we have a primary. I'm in the primary because large elements of the DFL family have endorsed my candidacy, the Teamsters, the construction trades, the teachers, and others. Last night I had a little social function, and three people who I think we would all agree represent the Democratic Party, former Governor Wendell Anderson, Mayor George Latimer, and former Attorney General Spanas, were all co-chairing my campaign, were there. So I think everybody would agree that they're good Democrats. They happen to be supporting me. Others have candidates supporting them. This is a good contest. I think everybody's debating on the issues, and I think 550,000 people ought to have a chance to choose their next congressman, not just 200 people who came to a convention.
Kathy Hartnett?
Well, I didn't seek the DFL endorsement because I really want to change the process. And the rules of the DFL endorsement was that unless you committed not to run in the primary, you basically had no shot at endorsement. And I feel like good Democrats need to challenge ourselves and change the way we do things. We now have 500 volunteers in my campaign. So to me, that's a sign that there really are Democrats out there who want to do things differently. I think we need to change the system. A September 12th primary is ridiculous. You spend the summer campaigning. No one wants to pay attention to politics in the summer. Our Minnesota legislators set the elections. They should set a primary in the early spring and let us be done with this, so that we could be concentrating on beating Linda Runbeck, not arguing among ourselves.
And one quick question before we go to our first audience question here. Do any of you think gender should be a factor in this race?
I think the most important,
this is Steve Novak.
The most important question is qualification. I think people want a qualified candidate who represents the views that are reflected in policies that will be passed into law that most appropriately fit their personal circumstances. They as individuals, their family, their business, their children, their schools, their health care program. I think the public is intelligent. I think that they weigh the positions of all the issues, regardless of gender, and that they vote for the most qualified candidate, and that's how we're best served.
Kathy Hartnett?
Sometimes I feel when people ask that question, it's sort of curious. It's like they're saying that if it's a gender issue, then we're not talking about qualified candidates. The fact of the matter is we have a substantial gap in Congress and the U.S. Senate, and 52% of the population's talents and gifts are being ignored by not electing more women to Congress. And to the Democratic Party, I say, gentlemen, gentlemen, in an open seat, it is our chance within the party to change the way, the look of Congress. And open seats are opportunities for women to run. And I hate that connection of qualifications or gender. You have qualified candidates running. I have more national experience working with Congress and leading national issue campaigns than anyone in this race. I'm not concerned about my qualifications, but yes, we should elect a woman to Congress.
Chris Coleman?
Well, I actually take offense to what Kathy is ultimately saying, and she said this to me before. She said, you have no business running for this seat. That's what she said to me. That's what she said to my family members. I'm sorry, but I think everyone has an opportunity to run for this seat. And to say that you don't have a right to run because you're a man or because you're black or because you're a Native American is absolutely ridiculous. The reason people talk about gender issues in politics is because they don't feel like they've been represented. The issues that women care about, the issues that families care about, haven't been talked about. But I've been talking about those, not only in my race, but in everything that I've done in my life. I talk about schools. I talk about family values. I talk about having people have opportunities to raise their children in a healthy environment. I have been a member of the NARAL board and very active in the pro-choice movement. So, to simply say that, I don't have a right to run, I take offense to that.
Betty McCollum, did you want to comment before we wrap up this question?
Well, I've run for city councils, and I've ran for the Minnesota State House, and I've never brought up the fact of my gender. People know that I'm a woman when I'm at the door. They can figure that one out all by themselves. But they do ask questions, and they ask questions. What will you do? Will you listen to me? Will you fight for my family? And those are the... My report card's been consistent. I've been reelected back to the Minnesota House for doing just that, standing up for families.
St. Paul Pioneer Press editorial page editor Ron Clark standing by now here at our State Fair booth with a question from our audience. Ron?
Gary, we have Tersenia Schuett from St. Paul with a question for our candidates.
Hi, I'm from St. Paul, as you mentioned, and I haven't made up my mind who I'm going to vote for. Bruce Vento left some very big shoes for one of you to fill, and I wish you all luck doing that. The issue that's the most important for me, as someone who appreciates beautiful Minnesota, the boundary waters, our fresh air, our clean water, our forests, I want to know which one of you is going to be as committed and as passionate as Mr. Vento was to those issues.
All right, well, let's start with Chris Coleman on this one, and we work our way down the list here.
I noticed her from the back with her Quetico hat on. I have spent a lot of time in the boundary waters. I spent my graduation present from high school was a trip to Outward Bound in northern Minnesota. The environment is an issue that has always been a part of the family's consciousness. We have not only celebrated what Bruce Vento has done, but we've taken our own steps to protect the environment. Bruce Vento, has been a tireless champion of the environment, and I think that we will all lose when he retires from Congress. But the fact of the matter is, we need to keep on fighting. Where I would take it a little bit different is not only fighting on the pristine lands that Bruce Vento has fought for, but I think we absolutely have to take seriously the issue of global warming. I know this is just a hot day at the fair, but if you look around us, we have water on the polar ice caps for the first time in 50 million years. We have the largest fire season in the history of the West. Right? Millions and millions of acres under fire right now, where they're talking about those fires not going out for 50 years or until spring. The fact of the matter is every time you open the paper, there's another natural disaster that's occurring as a result of global warming, and Congress isn't taking it seriously. So I would like to continue to champion the causes that Bruce Vento has fought for, but I'm also going to start talking seriously about the issue of global warming.
Betty McCollum?
Well, Bruce has had an outstanding record in leadership, and it's one that has served Minnesota well, but I've worked on a lot of environmental issues. I've worked on restoring wetlands in Lake Phelan, one of the first urban wetland restorations, brownfields development in Williams Hills. And I've also been up north in the Voyager Citizen Council when there's been the discussion about how we should treat access to the land up there. And I'll tell you, I have tremendous respect from Bruce. Because there's a lot of pressure on from foresters and other people who want to open up and change the way we use our natural lands. But one issue that I would really like to see us become more involved in, and I've spoken with Congressman Vento and the Sierra Club and the League of Conservation Voters who happen to be endorsing me on this because of my legislative record, is we need to set our pollution standards so that they're child-based. Gary, the standards are set for you. They're not set for a toddler, so when a toddler is breathing our air and the pollution is set at your level, there's something wrong with that. And that's why we're seeing an increase in childhood cancer and childhood asthma. And I want to go to Congress and have standards that are safe for everyone in a family.
Steve Novak, Kathy Hartnett, either one of you care to comment?
Sure. My first job in the environmental movement was in 1977 when I went to Washington, D.C. and worked on the BWCA bill with Bruce Vinto. I then helped launch the League of Conservation Voters, put on the first international conference on climate change back in the early 80s. I have not been heavily involved in environmental issues in Minnesota since I came back in 1992, other than working on the Mississippi River. But I think there are huge national issues that need to be worked on, and I've been involved in a number of national campaigns around those national issues, including ending childhood lead poisoning. So we've got a huge plate of issues, but I think the American public is truly engaged now. You know, one of the great things about Bruce is he started all of this before it was popular. Now it's very popular to be an environmentalist, and I think the key now is to push forward and engage the public, which I think is on the right side of environmental issues, to be more active.
Steve Novak?
Well, I'm not sure anybody can replace Bruce Vinto when it comes to the environment, but I would certainly like to try to do as well. And feel that I have a record in the legislature that says that that's possible. I grew up on the east side of Duluth. I spent my childhood walking the Lester and French and Sucker Rivers, fishing trout. I've been to the Arctic. I understand the importance of keeping that pristine in terms of the world itself. And I believe I have strong views in these areas. I think if you sat the people who belong to groups like the Sierra Club and the League of Conservation Voters down at a table, and you asked them one simple question, write out on a piece of paper the five or six programs that you think are the most important policy changes that have been passed into law in the last, decade and a half. What would they be? They would be issues like the Environmental Trust Fund. They would be issues like Reinvest in Minnesota. They would be the Pheasant and Trout Stamp programs. They would be the Legacy Fund programs and many more. The one thing that all of those programs have in common is I was either the chief author or the co-author of every one of them, and we passed them into law. The Petra Fund program that I did with Congressman Vinto. These have been national precedent-setting programs to preserve the environment, expand our set-aside programs, help the habitat and the natural resources of this country. So I think I have a very strong record in that area, but I don't know that any of us can replace Bruce when it comes to the environment.
Just a quick question before we break for news here. Do any of you support any kind of change in the nation's abortion laws? Chris Coleman?
Absolutely not. We have to protect Roe versus Wade. I think it's one of the reasons why the presidential election is particularly important this year. We have a Supreme Court right now that understands the right and the importance of the woman's right to choose, and we need to make sure that keeps on.
Kathy Hartnett?
I would like to change some of the laws. We have dropped coverage to women in the military. We have dropped coverage to people who work for our federal government across the country. The anti-choice movement has been picking away at the rights of federal employees for years. So I want to change the laws so that we go back to what this issue is really about, which is an issue between a woman and her doctor and her family, and it should be part of every health care package.
Steve Novak?
I support the Supreme Court decision on abortion as I have since 1973.
And Betty McCollum?
I also support Roe v. Wade, and I will work hard to protect and guarantee privacy for everyone's medical records.
This is Midday coming to you from on Minnesota Public Radio. We are broadcasting live from the State Fair today, our Minnesota Public Radio booth out at the fair. Debate featuring the four DFL candidates for the 4th District Congressional seat currently held by Democrat Bruce Vinto. Debate co-sponsored by the St. Paul Pioneer Press. Again, those of you here in the audience, if you've got a question for the candidates, Ron Clark of the Pioneer Press will get you on the air. Those of you listening on the radio, give us a call at 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. We'll get to some more discussion in just a couple of minutes. Right now, let's catch up on some news headlines. Here's Greta Cunningham. Greta?
Thanks, Gary. Good afternoon. Investigators say they've turned up evidence of more deaths linked to allegedly faulty Firestone tires. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration declined to say how many more cases are under investigation. Previously, the agency said it was looking into 62 deaths. Bridgestone Firestone announced a U.S. recall on August 9th of 6.5 million Firestone ATX, ATX2, and Wilderness AT tires. A new survey finds illegal drug use among U.S. teenagers is continuing to decline. The survey finds 9% of the nation's 12 to 17-year-olds using drugs, down nearly 2.5% since 1997, but drug use is rising among 18 to 25-year-olds. 6-year-old Ilian Gonzalez will start the second grade in Cuba tomorrow. The boy was the center of one of the world's most publicized custody battles. Teachers met with parents of Ilian's 11 new classmates earlier this week. Cuban officials have said they're trying to prevent the kind of mass media coverage Ilian had while he was living with his relatives in Miami. Ilian was returned to Cuba in June after a 7-month custody battle between his father and his Miami relatives. On the third anniversary of her death, a steady stream of admirers is trekking to the unofficial shrine to Princess Diana in Paris. Bouquets, pictures, and flowers were left at a statue near the tunnel where the princess died in a car crash. In regional news, thousands of Minnesotans in 116 cities will have a new phone company today. Citizens Communications of Connecticut has bought the exchanges formerly owned by GTE, which had merged with Verizon. Citizens says GTE workers will keep their jobs and customers should see no change in service. The forecast for Minnesota today calls for partly cloudy skies in the south. There's also a chance of afternoon thunderstorms in the south. High temperatures today ranging from 65 in the northwest to near 90 in the southeast. Checking current conditions around the region, mostly fair skies reported in. St. Cloud reports fair skies in 70. Skies are fair in Rochester in 82. Duluth reports fair skies in 65. And in the Twin Cities, fair skies, a temperature of 82 degrees. That's a check on the latest news.
All right. Thank you, Greta. It is about 28 minutes before 1 o'clock. It certainly feels warmer than 82 degrees out here at the State Fair. I think the temperature is going up rapidly. Nice and humid. Beautiful summer day, don't you think? Those of you here out at the fair, this is what we wait for all winter long. Our guests today out here at the fair are the four DFL candidates for the 4th District Congressional seat. Steve Novak, Kathy Hartnett, Chris Coleman, Betty McCollum have come by today to talk about the issues, take your questions. Ron Clark of the St. Paul Pioneer Press, our co-sponsor, standing by to get questions on the air from those of you here in our audience. We've got a lot of callers on the line as well, so we hope to get some of those questions as well. But let's pick up a question from our audience. Ron?
Gary, we have Judy Wong from St. Paul who wants to ask a question about health care.
Hi, I'm Judy Wong, and I work for Women Venture, which is an economic development agency in St. Paul. We help women start their own businesses. One of the biggest challenges, however, with women and starting their own businesses is having adequate health care when they do such. So my question for the candidates is how are you going to solve this issue so you can support women in starting their own businesses?
All right. I think we left off with Kathy Hartnett. Your turn to start first.
Well, I'm a small business owner, a woman business owner who has my own business and cannot believe what I have to pay in health care. And I believe in providing full health coverage for all my employees so they are all covered. And it's very expensive. I'll tell you, the whole health care debate is really interesting to me because I heard it first in Washington 22 years ago. And Ted Kennedy said, we're not going to get the attention on health care until 30% of the people are underinsured or have no insurance. And when we hit that mark, we started to talk about it. I think there are a lot of plans for health care out there. I think that what needs to happen now is to decide which one's going to work that guarantees accessible health care to every American. If we don't, we have to decide who doesn't get health care. And in the end, we'll pay for it one way or the other. So I am very interested in pursuing this. And one of the things I've decided to do is that as a member of Congress, I'm going to pay for my own health insurance because members of Congress have the best package available. And I'm worried that maybe the reason they're arguing instead of acting is because they're not feeling the pinch in their pocketbooks. And I felt it as I feel it as a small business person. And maybe if members of Congress feel it, it'll be pushing them harder to do something with the plans that are out there and get this thing resolved.
Anybody else care to comment? Steve Novak?
Well, I've stated since I got into this race in March that providing accessible and affordable health care to all Americans is the number one most important issue in the campaign. And I provided a specific set of examples of how I would go about funding that. First of all, I'm suggesting that we have a unique period of time in American history where we have a significant federal budget surplus. I'm proposing that one-fourth of that budget surplus be spent in the healthcare area to expand health insurance to cover all children and to expand Medicare to include prescription drug benefits. Second, I think that we need to address the prescription drug issue in a number of ways within the current structure. Exclusivity of brand is too long for the companies that enjoy that, should be shortened. We should have more ability to bring generic drugs into the marketplace to help bring costs down. And prescription drugs themselves as an industry should be covered under the NAFTA agreement so we can have competition at that level. So I think providing more accessible and affordable health care is the number one issue in the campaign.
Chris Coleman?
Well, you know, it's an absolute disgrace, the fact that 11 million children go without health insurance every day in this country, and we got to do something about it, not to talk about adults. The 42 million adults are going without it. We know how we can solve the problem, whether it's strictly an infusion of cash or making sure that prescription drugs are covered for our Medicare recipients. But the fact of the matter is, this, I think, gets into the issue of campaign finance reform. Maybe we're jump-starting that discussion. But you look at the amount of money the pharmaceutical companies are putting into campaigns, into the Republican committees, the Democratic committees. I mean, there's no way that system is going to change as long as that kind of money is flowing through congressional campaigns. You have to start with campaign finance reform, because then you start freeing people up to make decisions that they know they have to make, and then we can talk about covering those 11 million children.
Betty McCollum, you care to comment?
Well, I think I'll agree with Chris on campaign finance reform. It's a hot button issue. At the state capitol, there were more pharmaceutical people ready to talk to me when we were voting on senior prescription drug coverage in committee than there were people in the audience sometimes, it seemed like. So there is a lot of affluence being spread around by those companies. One of the reasons why I'm making a decision to not take any pharmaceutical money in this election at all from any of the PACs. But back to the question that dealt with women's businesses and women's health care coverage. You know, quite often I have found when people want to offer lower cost policies, the first things that they talk about eliminating in those policies are things like, you know, access to mammograms and cervical cancer screening, as you, as an individual, based on your family history, you think needs to take place. And contraceptive coverage, quite often, is the first thing to be cut in order to offer lower premium policies. Those directly affect women. And I would like to go to Congress and make sure that everyone has the health care security that they need for their family to be healthy.
When I ask a question about prescription drugs, that's been a hot topic, and a lot of the politicians running for office this year have been beating up on the drug companies. Yet they have developed over the years an immense number of miracle drugs. And in fact, the reason prescription drugs aren't included in the Medicare program, or weren't initially, was because it was such a tiny part of medical care. Now it's become so significant thanks to the drugs that have been developed. Are any of you at all concerned that this push to rein in the cost of drugs is in fact going to dry up research and development money, and we'll end up without the new developments that we need? Betty McCollum?
I'm not worried about that at all. I sponsored a bill that went in at the end of session that Maine's doing, and they did. The state of Maine did a phenomenal amount of research, and what they found out is that we pay, as taxpayers, you and I are paying for the cutting-edge drugs for heart disease, for cancer treatment, for AIDS. We're paying for that out of our tax dollars, not the pharmaceutical companies. Their research and development's going more into the cosmetic line of it. So I'm not afraid that that's going to affect that at all. And we do have to do something about prescription drug prices. And it's not out of line to talk about it. I was with two different senior groups just the other day. One woman pays $70 a month for eye drops that are needed in order to keep her eyes healthy. $70. It's not covered. Why is that not covered? You're right, Gary. Those things weren't first on the formula because it was set up to be a hospitalization plan. As we have learned to do things that are less invasive to help people with their quality of life and their health care, we need to cover those.
Anybody else care to comment? Chris Coleman?
Well, the fact of the matter is most of those drugs were developed with a very, very substantial portion of federal dollars. The federal government is paying for the research that goes into the development of these drugs. And what happens is, I know I don't begrudge anybody, any company, whether it's a pharmaceutical company or not, for making a profit. But they are extending the patents on these things beyond any kind of reasonable period of time, to the point where there is no competition. An article in the Tribune the other day that talked about that $50,000 was put into the Republican National Committee coffers at the exact same time from a pharmaceutical company that was getting an extension on their patent. So all of a sudden you have these extensions that preclude competition long after that patent should have expired. And it's pharmaceutical industry was excluded from NAFTA. You know, we have all kinds of situations that say, you know, you can make a profit, you can do your development, we'll help you, we'll research, we'll put federal dollars into it. But when the time comes, we're going to allow competition in that industry so that we can bring these costs down.
Kathy Hartnett?
I think there are three things that we should look at, and they involve individual responsibility, government responsibility, and private sector responsibility. You know, the federal. When I worked with the federal government and the Center for Disease Control and NIH, National Institute for Health, we're not spending nearly as much as we should on medical research. And I think we should do more on that. But I also think we have to have a sit-down with the pharmaceutical companies. We don't share in their patents. We give them grants. We don't make them pay them back, and they don't pay interest on it. So I think it would be an interesting conversation to have with the pharmaceutical companies about whether they'd like to change the rules of the game or whether they will behave responsible. No one can make the moral case. There isn't a CEO in the country who can make the moral case in a pharmaceutical company that they're doing the right thing, so we need to do that. But individual responsibility can also play into this, and I want to engage citizens. If you own pharmaceutical stock, check your pension fund. If there's pharmaceutical stock in there, write a letter to the companies you own and tell them what you think they should be doing. There's an individual role that we can all play in starting to turn around the way this country behaves.
Steve Novak.
Well, I think that we're discussing the most important issue in the campaign because it's an issue that the next session of Congress can definitely change. I've been on this issue since the day I entered the campaign back in March. It's the reason for the slogan in my campaign, Prescription for Change, is the focus on the prescription drug pricing issue. There's four things that can be done. Number one, the federal government has been receding from its historical commitment in terms of research in this area, and that should be turned around, and they should be increasing their research dollars. But the second, third, and fourth points apply to the private marketplace as it exists today. If people invest in a product, they should get a return, but they shouldn't be allowed to have exclusivity of brand for an unlimited period of time and to gouge the public, which is what's been happening. Secondly, they were effective in their lobbying, and the drug industry was excluded from the NAFTA agreement. I think that's wrong, and that should be changed. Third, we have generic alternatives to these drugs, and we should make it easier for them to be marketed and to be advanced into the marketplace to help bring prices down.
Can I follow up on that just for
very briefly, and then I want to get
to I'll be
caller.
Brief. You know,
this is Betty McCullough.
The comments about profits, I support capitalism. I think all of us pretty much up here on the stage do. But I draw the line when the same antibiotic, the same anti-inflammatory drug costs less for a cow than it does for a human. And I think that that needs to be held accountable, and that to me is price gouging and profiteering, not taking an honest profit back.
Lawrence has been waiting patiently for the better part of an hour with a question on the phone. Lawrence, go ahead. Thank you for your patience.
Thank you. I'm going to change the table here a bit, and I keep hearing your candidates talk about what government needs to do, and that concerns me, and I'm going to hang up and listen to their comments. But what is it that they're willing to do to ensure the individual liberties of citizens, as opposed to saying the government can do this, the government can do that, the government should do this, and the government should do this? I mean, healthcare, honestly, is a moral issue, and I understand that. But I don't see, when I look in the Constitution of the United States, where it's an entitlement, and I'm just using that as an example, it seems like so many people are saying the government should entitle me to things that people aren't looking at. What laws do we need to go in and say, this is ridiculous, and pull back on the number of laws? Because the way I look at it, we're going to turn into a socialist society or a communist society where the government is dictating everything we do.
All right, thanks, thank Lawrence. You. Steve Novak, you go first on this one.
Well, I think that we have a constitution that for 200 years has guaranteed our civil liberties, and I certainly support that. I don't share this gentleman's concern in terms of the way things have been going. I don't know that there's ever been a better time to be an American citizen. However, even in this time of prosperity, we have numbers of people who are falling through the cracks, and where they're being hurt financially and economically is largely in the healthcare area. We have a debate now that has shifted from minimum wage to livable wage, and I think that's an important shift in the debate. If we're going to move and have true welfare reform and really give people those individual liberties that this gentleman is speaking to, we need to have policies that guarantee that a person has a job at a wage that they can raise a family. And that means we have to guarantee that we have a structure of support integrated between the public and private sectors that provide for housing, transportation, a livable wage, and public education.
Chris Coleman, you're next.
If you want to take away people's liberties, you tell them that they can't change jobs because they wouldn't be able to afford health insurance in a new position. If you want to take away people's rights to, you know, to move around, then you tell them that they can't, that there won't be affordable housing for them. The fact is, government is, it can be very much an agency for liberating people and creating freedom. It's an economic issue. It's not a moral issue. It's an economic issue. People have to have the ability to find a place to live. They have to have the ability to have health insurance, because if they don't, then they're stuck and they're not able to advance themselves. You know, the great thing about this country is a Horatio Alger's kind of approach to it, which you can improve yourself. You can improve your lot in life. But you can't do it if you can't find housing. You can't do it if you don't have health insurance. Those are the things that strip people of liberty and dignity. And that's why I think, as a congressman, I want to fight for those issues.
Kathy Hartnett?
All you have to do is look at Congress on both sides of the aisle and know that both the Democrats and the Republicans are very committed to the private sector. They're accepting lots and lots of PAC money from both sides. Neither side has a market on that. And I actually think that's an old rumor, that Democrats are somehow against the private sector. We all thrive in the private sector. Most Democrats work in the private sector. So I think that a civil society has a healthy private sector, a healthy government that supports that private sector and individual rights and individual responsibility. And any time one of those entities isn't doing their job, we start to have problems in this country.
Betty McCollum?
Well, I'll take this one step farther. You know, an issue that government needs to step up and play a role in is protecting your privacy. It's huge. You need to be able to rely on someone to say, no, you can't have access to that person's medical records. No, you cannot have access to their financial records. No. And we're missing the boat in discussing that issue and how it relates to corporate responsibility and to government responsibility, so that you as a citizen can feel secure in your own home, that your neighbor down the street or someone across the world isn't looking at your private life.
Ron Clark, good question here.
Gary, we have Steve Rademacher from Cologne, Minnesota, which is outside the district, so he doesn't really have a horse in this race, but he's got a question about cows.
I want to know where we're standing as far as a decent wage for the dairy that we put out there, the milk that we're producing. I think it's been a long time. We're looking at 11 and 12 months in here where we're getting underpaid. And I know you're out of my district, but I'd like to see Congress do something, not within the next 2 months, the next 4 months or a year. It's got to be started today.
Okay.
Make me a happy camper.
Betty McCollum, you're up first. Dairy pricing.
You know, I learned more about dairy pricing than I ever thought I was going to, being a member of the Minnesota House Ag Finance Committee. This gentleman's right. You're working for free, and it's wrong. And it's wrong because of the compacts that are in. And it's not that different than the compacts and formulas that we're suffering under with Medicare. And we need to get up there, and we need to fight hard. And you know what? You're right. You can't wait any longer. How many is it? 500 or some family farms every so often are closing up? $3 an hour. I mean, we wouldn't allow people to do that at McDonald's, and we're asking our farmers to do that. I'm going to fight hard for agriculture, because it's part of the economic engine that drives Minnesota. And you know what? You feed me and you put the milk on my table for my children. Thank you.
Anybody else care to comment? Chris Coleman?
Well, first of all, our listeners should know we actually have someone apparently with mad cow disease in the back of the audience out there. So there he is.
Very attractive outfit, sir.
Lovely. And I thought I was hot. But, the fact of the matter is, we have a governor right now that thinks that, you know, farming is just like any other business, that we should treat it like any business, and if it fails, it fails, and we don't have to do anything about it. But what he fails to understand is the importance of farming, not only to the state of Minnesota, but everybody that lives in the city or in the rural parts of Minnesota. We can't just treat it like a business. It's a much more important industry. We need to make sure that farmers have decent prices. You know, you got this rule that says, you know, the further away from Wisconsin you are, the more money you get. What does that, you know, who came up with that one? It sure wasn't anybody that had any common sense. Right. You know, the first thing that we can do is change that rule. I forget what town is it that...
It's Eau Claire.
No.
It's
from Eau Claire. The further away from Eau Claire you are, the more money you get for your dairy. Now, your milk. How does that make any sense? You know, one of the things that's important about this seat is, even though we represent a rural and a suburban area, or I mean an urban and a suburban area, We affect policy not just throughout the state of Minnesota, but throughout the world. That's the importance of this seat, and we can't just say, well, it's not part of my district. It's part of everybody's district when we're talking about farming.
Anybody else? Steve Novak, care to comment?
Well, for starters, if I had been in Congress in the last couple of years, I wouldn't have voted for the Freedom to Farm Act. Secondly, I do support the federal price support structure for dairy. And third, these are important issues to the people of 4th District. And interestingly, some of the most important farmers or people who represent farmers happen to live in our district. I was door knocking on Fairview Avenue just 3 days ago and ran into an old Senate colleague of mine, Dave Fredrickson, who's the president of the Minnesota Farmers Union, who lives in Roseville, and the office for the Farmers Union is just down the street. Secondly, just over here, we've got the Agricultural Extension of the University of Minnesota, where a lot of these farm products and different things are developed. So I think that we are integrated with the rural economy. We need to be thinking that way as a comprehensive society. Agricultural is critical to both our economy and our social structure, and I will be very supportive of the Minnesota farmer.
Kathy Hartnett, would you care to comment?
One of the things I think that's great about being a member of Congress is you don't just represent the district you come from, you really represent the country. And there are very specific laws in Congress that are completely goofy. And what's very interesting to me is members of Congress have such a hard time undoing messes that they create. You know, people make honest mistakes, but when you make an honest mistake and times change, then you change what you do. And I think that part of the reason I want to go to Congress is because we need to get a little bit of a sense of humor about ourselves. And frankly, the committees in Congress that deal with the regulations that you're talking about, first they need to sort of laugh at themselves for being so ridiculous, sitting around in Washington, D.C. with a map trying to decide who lives farther away from one market or another, and just own up to the fact that it doesn't work anymore and just change it.
Chris Coleman?
Well, you know, Kathy's kind of right in one way, in the sense that these rules seem real simple. We should just go in and change them. But again, I go back to campaign financing reform. The reason they're not being changed is not because the members of Congress are stupid. It's they're very smart. They know exactly where their dollars are going to come from for the next campaign. And whether it's, you know, you look at the fact that the state of Minnesota, our seniors are paying the exact same amount for Medicare coverage that the seniors in Florida are, and yet receiving a tenth of the coverage that people in Florida are. I mean, there's a powerful industry out there that's, you know, called lobbying that says, you know, we're going to control what's going on in this body, and we're going to control it through dollars. You can't make these kind of fundamental changes, common sense changes, unless we go to campaign finance reform.
Okay, we're just about out of time here, but let's see if we can get a couple more questions on. Don, a quick question, please.
I have three very quick comments, and I've been waiting for quite a while. I hope I can make them.
Okay, please.
All right, the first one is I would like to see more common people serving in all political levels at all national and local governments. More plumbers, waitresses, fewer captains of industry, politicians.
Okay, number two?
The second thing is I would like these candidates to address the fact that there is a stigma attached to people like myself who are now wanting to keep their money at this time of economic boom. Those of us that are saying we're not interested in funding entitlements, we're not interested in funding social programs, are being looked at as pariahs, and they're saying shame on you for that attitude when we have all this money, now we should be spending it.
Okay,
the last thing is I would like to see all of the candidates consider themselves for shorter terms. Anybody that's been in political office of any kind at any level for 26 years doesn't belong there again, period.
Okay. Now, we don't have a lot of time here to get comments on all of these things. Chris Coleman, you're first. Would you support any kind of a tax cut?
Would I support? I absolutely would support a tax cut. I think
big tax cut, little tax cut.
Targeted to the middle class.
Okay.
And I just want to say I'm about the most common person I know. You know, I'm running around trying to, you know, put food on the table. I'm coaching hockey. I'm coaching soccer. You know, I don't know how I can get any more common. That's what I'm accused of all the time.
Term limits?
Not term limits. I want more competitive elections, and then that would have the same effect as term limits.
Kathy Hartnett, lower taxes of any sort, any kind of tax cut?
I don't know. I want to get the deficit down. I want to solve health care. I want federal funding increased for special education. And after we've done all that, then I'm willing to talk about a tax cut. But now's the time to solve problems.
Term limits?
I'm a self-imposed term limit person. If Bruce Vento had not decided to retire, he might have been there for 10 or 15 more years. And although I admire Bruce, a whole generation of Minnesotans wouldn't have had a chance to share their gifts with Congress. So I'm a 10-year max.
Steve Novak, lower taxes, any kind of tax cut you'd support?
I've had a public policy since the day I announced for this office in March that I would support putting one-fourth of the federal budget reserve into two parts of the budget, buying down the debt and providing a middle-income tax cut.
Okay, and term limits?
I oppose it. I support open competitive elections, and I'd love to have that gentleman file against me.
Okay, and Betty McCollum, any kind of a tax cut?
Well, after we do the deficit reduction that we need to do so we're not paying outrageous interest on money that we borrow and leave our children with the debt, I think we could talk about it. But we need to address family economic security issues with health care first. But it should definitely be on the table to talk about. And by the way, sir, I punch a time clock when I show up for Dayton.
Term limits?
Term limits, you know, we need to have campaign finance reform so people feel that they can run. I ran against two incumbents once. And the reason why I was able to do it was because of some of the campaign finance reform here in Minnesota.
All right, real quick one here. Ron?
Gary, Justin Kelly from Badness Heights.
Yeah, I'm starting college this Tuesday, actually, and I want to be a teacher, but I'm worried about teacher bashing. They only work 9 months, and they get paid too much. Well, $20-some thousand a year doesn't seem that much to me. And I especially want to, Mr. Novak, because you're endorsed by the teachers. What are you going to do about this?
Okay, we need to kind of focus this because we're just about out of time. And let's rephrase the question just a tad, and we'll start with you, Steve Novak. Would you support some kind of federally subsidized substantial increase in teacher pay? And I mean substantial increase.
The answer to that is yes, from the standpoint that, again, since I announced for this job in March, I've had a public position that I would put one-fourth of the federal budgeted reserve into public education and spend it in four ways. One, to upgrade the physical buildings. Two, to upgrade the profession, including salaries. Three, to expand curriculum. And four, technology.
Betty McCollum?
If the federal government funded its area of special education, if the federal government got involved in cleaning up our buildings so that they were safe and technology wired, then we would have more money for more local control for teachers, and I'm proud to have the St. Paul teachers endorsement.
Chris Coleman.
I got two kids in the public school system, and I greatly admire what teachers do. I don't think that teacher salaries alone are the answer. I think we have to make an investment period in our education.
Kathy Hartnett.
I want the feds to cover special ed, upgrading buildings, and release that burden on property taxes, and then let local school districts increase teacher pay. If you're entering the job market, you can make more at 3M entering the job market than you can being a teacher. That's not what it's all about.
Okay, and very briefly, let's see. Would you have voted to impeach Bill Clinton? Kathy Hartnett, yes or no?
Absolutely not.
Steve Novak?
No.
Betty McCollum?
No.
Chris Coleman?
No, despite the fact that I think he was wrong.
Thanks so much for joining us today, and good luck to all four of you.
Thank you.
Big decision day. These are the DFL candidates for the 4th District Congressional seat. Big decision day coming up just 12 days from now. September 12th is the primary, and one of these four folks will move on to the November general election against Republican Linda Runbeck and whoever wins the Independence Party primary. So we hope that today's debate, co-sponsored by the St. Paul Pioneer Press, has helped clarify a few things in the minds of all the undecided voters. According to the polls, there are lots of you out there yet. This is a race that's being watched all across the country, so even if you don't live in the 4th District, this is one to keep an eye on all the way through Election Day. Gary Eichten here. I'd like to thank all of you for joining us today. We're broadcasting live for the rest of the fair out here at the Minnesota State Fair, Minnesota Public Radio's booth. Check out our website, minnesotapublicradio.org. You can actually see what's going on out there today, this being Web Day. Again, thanks for tuning in, and join us tomorrow for Midday.
Programming on NPR is supported by www.iseek.org, offering customized training, rapid response, and business growth information on the web at www.iseek.org.
Find news when you want it 24 hours a day at minnesotapublicradio.org. Regional news updated hourly, and national and international stories provided by the New York Times. Breaking news and in-depth stories. Point your browser to minnesotapublicradio.org.
We have a fair sky. It's up to 83 degrees at KNOW-FM, 91.1 Minneapolis and St. Paul. Pretty warm and humid all afternoon. It could hit 90 yet today, and we could also get a shower or thunder shower this afternoon. Showers and thunder showers are likely tonight, and then maybe tomorrow as well, but much cooler tomorrow with a high in the upper 70s.
From the McGlowan Theater in Charlotte, North Carolina, I'm Juan Williams, and this is Talk of the Nation. The term New South first was coined about 130 years ago to describe a region recovering from the Civil War. Later it was used to describe the region's economic shift from farming to industry. Now, once again, big changes are happening in the South, reshaping life in cities like Charlotte, North Carolina.
For most of the 20th century, people left the South for opportunity. Black folks moving to the North and white folks as well. And in the last 30 years or so, those folks are coming home because the opportunity's here. Charlotte's the second largest banking center in the United States, and there's money here.
A look at Charlotte and the changing face of the new South. Talk of the Nation after the news.